Welcome to episode 195 of Coffee Pods and Wads, a show sponsored by Rain Bodyfield, a fitness-focused drink to support your performance. The Hybrid Academy, who are ramping up their oversized range, which looks like it's launching at the end of the month, so you can keep an eye out and head to thehybridacademy.store and you can use PODS10 to validate me in their eyes and app yourself a discount in the process. BurbuxCoachDevelopment.com is an online and in-person course aimed at improving you as a coach, and you can use PODS for a discount there and take your coaching to the next level. And Whoop are also sponsoring the show. I've been using Whoop for coming up on 2 years now. I love it. I never share anything on here with you that I don't use myself. I drink Rain. I like it. They support the show, which is a major bonus. I wear the Hybrid Academy. I buy lots of their stuff, and they send me stuff, which is very gracious of them, and they support the show. I've done the Burr Box Coaching Development course, and I loved it, and they support the show. I've used Whoop for like 2 years. I love it. I get information from it, and I learn from it. If you have any questions on it, DM me or email me, and I'll happily fill you in as best I can, or I'll point you in the direction of someone who, like, you know, actually knows what they're talking about. It's basically the same as... it's a recovery coach, basically. So if your strength coach tells you information and you implement it, you'll improve as an athlete. The same goes for Whoop. It tells you information on your recovery. If you learn from it and apply it, your recovery will improve and you'll improve. You can head to join.whoop.com/CPW to join. And if you're already a member, you can join the CPW crew using comm-200828 and share your moment of pride for the open or just training in general for the last month or so, and win yourself a free year's membership with Whoop in the process. Today's guest is Nick Jordan. Nick is the brains behind Momentum, a global online therapy and rehab platform. He's worked with everyone from Sam Stewart and Sarah Sigmund's daughter to Andre Houdet and Roger Federer. We chat about everything from handball to Dubai, injury and best practices, working with the best and the worst injuries he's ever seen. Enjoy, listen, share and tag.
I appreciate you taking the time out repeatedly.
No problem. happened to me as well, Peter. Don't sweat it. You know, this is like...
But it's so rare, and it's so it's becoming more frequent now. Yeah. Because I'm probably scheduling more interviews now, but just if anyone cares, so you're in Dubai and you're 4 hours ahead of me, and I knew you were 4 hours ahead of me because I'm not an idiot, but I forgot and was like, okay, so if I want to talk to him at 8 p.m. my time, that's 4 p.m. his time. Yeah. And just had a brain fart.
That was wishful. So then I was at work.
Yeah. I was at work and you texted me saying, send me the link whenever you're ready to go. And I was like, fucking hell, he's very keen. we're not talking for another 8 hours. What's he on about? And then it just dawned on me and I was like, oh, okay, no, I fucked up. So yeah, I appreciate your patience. How long have you been in Dubai for?
It's almost 16 years now. Crazy.
Okay, and is
are we all you're by from the Switzerland way? Are we originally? All already, are we?
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, good.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, 16 years. A plan. Everybody comes to Dubai comes here for 2 or 3, and you end up staying longer. And so 16 years is half a lifetime for some.
Yeah. Where in Switzerland are you from?
I grew up in a little town outside, between Zurich and Luzern, so pretty much bang on in the middle of Switzerland, in the German-speaking part. My mother is originally from the French-speaking part, and she grew up first speaking French, but I grew up in the German-speaking part.
So what age were you when you left? You're going to give away your age now, if you're sensitive about that kind of thing.
No, I'm not sensitive at all. I can see it right here, and so not sensitive at all. I left when I was... yeah, pretty much when I was 30, I turned my whole life upside down. I'm 45 now, actually turning 46 tomorrow.
Oh, but, happy birthday.
So it's, at 30 years old, I met my wife. She's actually, usually people come to Dubai because their husbands have a job and then their wife follow, right? But now they did the other way around somehow. I'm from Switzerland, my wife is Swedish, and I was on a sailing trip in the Baltics with two mates, and certainly not intending to meet my future wife, but I did. And long story short, after a bit of back and forth between Sweden, Dubai, and Switzerland, because she lived already for 2 years, I came here and check it out to see if I could live here. And I was really intrigued because that was in 2005, 6 when Dubai was very different. You know, it was very, like 1001 nights, a bit, exotic and not quite so such a hustle and bustle yet. It was really an interesting place. But it was just about, the boom was just about to kick in. And I thought, like, I would love to live here for a while. Didn't never thought it's going to take 16 years. It's going to be here 16 years, but here we are.
And what does your wife do, or what did she do then?
She came here as an interior designer. She was hired by the rulers of the sheikh's company. She was headhunted for them, and she worked for them for 2, 3 years, and then went freelance as an interior designer. So when I met her, she was freelancing here in Dubai, and so it's a good place then, because really booming. I mean, price exploded. There was money, and people invested left, right, and center. So it's a good time. And then
She's in interior designing for the ruling
no.
family of Dubai. It must have been impressive. Like, be like, so do you want more gold or?
Yeah, a little bit like that. No, for the, I mean, she did some stuff for the ruling family, but it's mostly she worked for a company owned by the sheikh,
Okay.
and so they did some pretty interesting jobs for sure. I mean, hotels and some. This was just started with those luxury towers with full concierge service. The whole Dubai shebang, the kind of life we don't live, and yeah, that was definitely an interesting time for sure.
And what did you leave behind? So what were you doing in Switzerland when you met her, like pre-sailing trip?
I was working for a big healthcare provider, private hospital group at the time. So I did
As
in
a physiotherapist, was it?
healthcare management, actually. I mean, I did an economic
Okay.
degree, and then afterwards realized it's not really my world. So I went to, through my own injuries, I got into physiotherapy, did that degree. That was my main degree, and then studied manual medicine, and then yeah, I started to work for this private hospital group, and they kind of promoted me into management, and set up a few rehabilitation units, and then did more and more project management, and kind of climbed the ladder with a few colleagues, and worked, did several setups for instance, like a radiology unit, and a dialysis unit, and worked for this hospital group for a while, and that's when I met Marie. And so at one point, flying back and forth, I had to make a decision, right? What do we do? Where do we live? At the time, my Swedish wasn't that great, and Marie's Swiss German wasn't that proficient either. So, and we thought for us, both of us, it's good opportunities here. And to be honest, I mean, I loved the job I did, and I could have climbed this ladder continuously. It was a really good gig, but also I realized around me, most people were, hopefully nobody's listening, but most people were, workaholics and divorced and unhappy, and I just realized, okay, this could be my path and to success, but I'm probably not going to be very happy with it. And so I decided, let's do the jump and move to Dubai. And I came here for
And
actually
did
for another healthcare management job, funny enough, for an international provider, and they promised me all sorts of things. It sounded all great, and when I had my first 2, 3 meetings, I realized it's just hot air. And then I just told them, you know what, I'm out of here, and I just went back to the roots. I mean, I always continuously worked as a therapist, even in the in this hospital group. I never wanted to lose touch with my roots. I wanted to make sure, because in our field, it's really important that you have the experience, that you stay in touch with what you do. And so I just went back to roots, went full on back as a physiotherapist and manual therapist.
What you mentioned that you had injuries there. What injuries did you have that led you to want to do it, or when did they happen?
Ooh, how long do you have?
Did
I
you
had
was it
quite,
playing sport?
yeah, I did. I had a few. I used to play handball. It's a sport which I'm not sure how well known. It's in
Oh,
Ireland.
like Olympic handball,
Olympic
is it? The
handball,
one where you can
exactly. The
bounce?
one where you
Yeah,
shoot
okay.
in goals and tackle each other. I used to call it the mainland European rugby a bit, because it's the tackling is a bit less rough, but it's pretty much head-on collisions quite a lot. And so your knees, shoulders, ankles are a bit under distress. And so I had I mean, I'm not counting ankle sprains and ligament tears and stuff like that. I had a, I think I was 18. I had to destroy my ankle, my left ankle. I had some metal put in there. Came back, Actually, funny, I said, somebody said to me, he said, oh, you play handball, you must have had so many injuries. I said, no, never, I'm fine. 2 days later, I ended up in hospital and so I had some plates put in my ankle. Bounced back, I think, 3-4 months playing, and then I had a meniscus tear in my knee, so I operated that one, and then bounced back, and then I had a cartilage tear in my kneecap, and I had to operate that. So literally within about, I shouldn't have never said that, opened Pandora's box, 1.5 years, about 3 ops. And that's when I became interested first time into that profession. At the time, I was thinking, shall I study medicine, become a doctor? Something with sports, and kind of, you know, it's kind of fell in place through my own experiences. But I had, you know, more had like broken ribs, broken noses, had multiple sprained ankles, broken wrists, fingers, disc in my lower back, nerve damage in my neck. That was some CrossFit though. And, you know, lots of stuff and muscle tears. So the list is long. Anyway, so I mostly, when I see clients, I can usually empathize with them because most of the things I had.
They're like, they're describing their injury and you're like, oh yeah, 2004.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. You'll be fine. You'll and, be
what level of handball did you play? Like, was it like recreational or were you like in a league, or how professionalized is handball?
Well, it's, you can do it professionally, but you have to be really good, and to live off it in Switzerland, you can't live off handball. You have to be really good. You have to go to Germany, Spain, etc., France maybe. And so I, the highest of it was in the second highest division I played, and did this for a few years, and then first league for quite a few more years. And I was decent at it, would say, you know, was never really a question if I would go into that internationally for sure. But we had a few good years. It's a great sport.
And what age were you when you damaged your ankle? You were 18, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay. And then also 18, the other two knee injuries were like 18, 19 then.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Do you think if that had happened in, say, after 22 or 23, would you have just been like, oh, fuck this, I'm not going back? Like, do you think that going back, do you think the three injuries happening, if they happen at a different, you know, like, say, 4 years later, you would have been like, nah, I'm probably done. It's the first one that happened.
Hard to say, really. I mean, this, you know, injuries are so much part of that game, unfortunately. I mean, it's not a, even though I do have friends, they never got injured or never seriously injured. But they're a bit part of that game. And yes, I'm sure there's a time when it's like I had enough, but I haven't reached that stage. But probably, so I stepped down probably around, I mean, I played some like second team games, which was a bit more recreational. And there it actually becomes more dangerous than if you play a bit more at the higher leagues, because a lot of people compensate the lack of technique with pure violence. And it becomes actually much more dangerous, even though it's a lot more direct, a lot harder, faster, stronger, everything in the higher leagues. But I mean, you know how it is when you do a sport, you're passionate about it, and injuries you take, you get back up and you move on. But at the age I'm right now, I still get injured here and there, unfortunately, and I'm still don't say fuck it, I'm done. I just you know, I believe in activity is just part of your life. And yes, if I would play handball again right now, I don't think it would be good for my body. Actually, I went back once. I remember we moved back to Dubai, and I think in the first summer I went home and I met a few buddies in the restaurant. I said, hey, we have training tonight. Why don't you come? I said, no, I'm gonna be in peace. You're going to have to carry me off because I'm not used to. I don't know if you played any contact sports, maybe rugby or so. It's the same thing, right? You get so used to the impact. It doesn't hurt. But then you go into the off season, and then you come back after a month, like, oh damn, that really hurt. And so I can imagine he had a hiatus of 3-4 years. So anyway, they talked me into it. But the first thing I did, I went to the pharmacy, bought shitloads of tape. You know, I put like my wrists, I taped my ankles and everything. It was my livelihood. So literally I came into the locker and taped up my everything. Looked like a mummy almost. And it was fun. But yeah, that chapter was over.
You mentioned as well that you had a trapped nerve from CrossFit. When did you become aware of CrossFit, or when did you start doing CrossFit?
Somebody asked me that the other day as well. And I'm just, how it came about, I couldn't tell you the year, but I was You have kids. So I had a, we had a daughter, and then you know how it is, the first 1 or 2 years is a priority shift, right? I mean, I always said I don't have time. It's actually not true. It's just you choose different priorities. And so for a while, first time in my life, that sports took a bit of a backseat. And then when I came back and I was here in a no handball team, right? Before, I literally did just like, well, you, every day at 7 o'clock, you there, you have training and then a morning session, etc. So you never have to really plan that. And all of a sudden, you're out of this routine and you have to find a new sport, right? And we obviously did off season, we did quite a bit of strength and conditioning training with some of this would be CrossFit-esque, I would say, but nobody would call it that way. But when I came back, let's say I want to get back into sport, a mate of mine who also had a kid, we decided let's do some martial arts, let's do some sparring. But we were both a bit out of shape, so we decided to get ourselves in shape. And he talked about this thing called CrossFit, right? And I was like, what the fuck is that? Like, yeah, it's like, you know, we do a bit of upper body pull, upper body push, some legs, some core, and run around and sprint somewhere. And basically do this multiple times. You know, it was a bit, I don't know how well it developed it was at the time. For us, that was it, right? And so we went down to the beach, and there was a pull-up bar, parallel bars, and that's what we did. And we just got ourselves in shape. And we started sparring a bit for a while. And then he got another kid, so all of a sudden it was on my own again. I thought, like, I actually enjoyed that. You know, I actually enjoyed that more than the whole sparring part, and joined the gym and started doing this a bit more seriously. And so, to give me a time, not 100% sure, but I would have been probably a good 10 years ago or a bit more.
And have you done it consistently? Like, have you, is that something that you've kept up then?
Yes and no. I mean, I'm 191 in height, it's about 6'3" and nearly 100 kilos heavy. So gymnastics have never been my strong suit, shall I say, but I actually loved it, weirdly enough. And so what I did at one point, I realized, okay, I'm pretty strong, but I suck at gymnastics. I want to do up my gymnastic game. And so I decided, I was obsessed with the idea of, okay, I want to get a strict ring muscle up, and I want to get whatever, front lever, back lever, just get myself strong in gymnastics. And I started working on this and realized my path was a slightly heavier and longer person. It's a bit longer. And so I was ready to just make a commitment and get this. And I think it took me about a year to get something, which takes other people maybe 3 months, but I was committed. And then when, you know, when you, how it is, when you reach a goal, you think, all right, got it. So what do we go next? And I really fell in love with, I love rings. I love everything gymnastics, funny enough, because of the challenge. And I think it has to do with my profession that, you know, if you look at the gymnast, it's like, this is where biomechanics and strength, everything comes together. If you don't, if you have a power leak somewhere, something that doesn't fit, it's just impossible, right? If you do a, yeah, muscle up is one thing, a strict one, or a front lever. If you lat stomp fire, something's not 100% right. It's just not possible. And so I think that's where the fascination came from. So I literally, before I knew it, it was like 3 or 4 years, I haven't lifted a proper barbell except for some accessory work. And then at one point I thought, like, all right, it's time to bring the barbell back, right? And it was just about the time when I met, you just had him on the show the other day, Andre Uday. Right. And so at the time I started to take care of him, and I said, you know what, I'll take care of you, and you improve my barbell skills. And that's what we did. And some other stuff, some more CrossFit, he's great teachers, or some more CrossFit specific stuff. I just want to get better at it. And so that's how. So if you say consistent, yes and no. I mean, in connection with the CrossFit, yes, but not say that I would have been consistently hitting the open, etc. But for me, it's the only way to train. It's like this all around athleticism.
Yeah. Were you a college lecturer as well? Did I hear that somewhere?
Yeah, I did. I did for a while in Switzerland. Yes, I was teaching biomechanics for a while at the physiotherapy college. Funny enough, the same college where I studied before. It was a bit weird in the beginning. Also, I'm standing the other side. Yeah. But I taught there for a while, for about, I think it was about a couple of semesters, not a few semesters, about 2 years, I think.
And what's it like? Because, like, I go to... I don't go to the physio regularly or anything, but like,
you shouldn't.
Sometimes if I, like you said, priorities.
Yeah.
If I go, I've been to, I'd say, 4 physios in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And they largely have, like, you know, there's a common thread running through the 4 of them, we'll say. But then sometimes you'll say something that one of the other physios has said to you in the past, and you'll mention that to the person you're with, and they'll be like, nah, I wouldn't, you know, like, and they'll like dismiss it. I won't have said, oh, another physio told me. I'll just ask like a question, yeah, and they'll dismiss it out of hand and be like, no, I would, and they'll go down a totally different route. So like, there is an element of like, I suppose like subjecticism or that, is it? Is that fair? Like where, like, depending on what your belief is, like a lot of people believe in, you know, like integrating Eastern medicine into like physiotherapy, and others like don't. And a lot of people think that like, oh, everything is connected, and if, you know, if this is connected to this, and if we work on this area, it will help this. Whereas other people think like, no, find the root cause of it and then fix that. And then, you know, like there seems to be multiple ways that you can approach a problem, which then leads to, I suppose, that subjecticism, or like, is that, am I being moronic, or is that fair?
No, that's fair to some extent, for sure. I mean, ultimately, you know, it's not a clear science in a way, because, you know, you can say, let's say, okay, I've broken an arm, you do an x-ray, okay, that arm is broken, that's like black or white, that's clear. We have scans, etc., at our hands, but as we know, and this thing, if you looked a bit through my material, you can see that I'm not a huge fan of this. For me, this is a small part of the puzzle, right? Like if somebody says, oh, I have a disc in my lower back, said, yeah, so we'll have about 63% other people above the age of 30. You know, it's like, it's pretty common. So ultimately, like I always say, like we operate a bit like doctors 50 years ago, where you have, our main tools is, for me, is communication, right? So you come to me and you say, look, I have this problem on my shoulder, and I feel it when I do this, and when I reach back, and I ask back, so how about this? I know, not there, but there. So in my brain, what's straight away happening, we call this process clinical reasoning, is I have like 15 highways going up, right? And like, okay, could be this. And first I just listen, and most important information comes from you. And then I ask questions, right? I have like 15 paths, I can't treat all of them. So I'm going to start to do some screening questions, and I try to narrow it down. And ultimately I have like, okay, 2-3 options to go into physical examination. And then I look at this and test it and try to either confirm or dismiss a certain thesis. And based on that, I treat. Now, in the whole interview process, you got the scans and the blood tests and whatnot. And it's also, it's like a puzzle, right? You piece it together and you say, what's most likely the scenario here? Because there's no real, you know, like, what is the truth? You know, why do you have a back pain? Why do you have a shoulder pain? This is, there could be different scenarios. But I think that's the most important thing of it, because once you can make sense of it, you can confirm it in a physical exam, and then you do a test treatment, like do a test retest, right? You say like, oh, that really hurts here. I test something, I move, I either I teach you something, we do an exercise together, or I release something manually, or crack your neck or whatnot, and you will go up like, wow, that's a lot better, right? So basically my thesis is confirmed. And so you're not just giving random information, you always want to test and retest and see if you're actually correct with this. You want to do this for the patient because you want to get you on board to see, oh wow, I just changed this, and I can actually, this is not just fixed, this is changeable. But also for me, I need to think, do I think down the right route? And so that reasoning process is a mix between, you know, being able to listen, which is actually, you know, for some people really hard, and then try to piece it together, which comes, is your education, is your knowledge, but it's also a big part is experience. You know, I mean, I think I treat a lot different today, much more direct and much quicker to the problem than I was 20 years ago. And I've been doing this for, including my studies in clinical placements, for nearly 25 years now. Makes me sound really old now, but so I graduated about 21 years ago, but it's a long study process where you do placements, and so you accumulate stuff, you know, you do things right, you do things wrong, and ultimately it's your, I think what your physios communicate to you is a summary of what they think, hopefully. Yeah, so it's, and there's obviously the thinking process different, but I agree with you. I mean, you can go to somebody who does, uses these techniques and that technique, and you might get better with all of them. And yeah, that's okay. But you know,
there's like, you have to be humble as well, I suppose, because like, it's very easy to slip into like a kind of confirmation bias where like, you know, you think, oh, totally, okay, their shoulder is sore, it's obviously, you know, the intercostal muscle or whatever. So then every answer they give you, you'll be like, yep, that fits what I think. Yep, yeah. That fits. And then anything that doesn't, you'll be like, oh, we'll swing back to that later on. Exactly. It's obviously this. So like, yeah, like it's because it is interesting. And I suppose there's a lot, you're relying a lot on the patients. Like I have shit body awareness, like awful. Like we'll be warming up in the gym and like Joe, our coach, I vividly remember one day him saying like, oh, you really want to feel your glutes firing here. And I remember thinking in my head, like, the fuck does that feel like? You know, it's just like, I just have no body awareness. Yeah. And like, he came over, I was like, you know, like he jammed his thumb into the side of my glutes and was like, oh yeah, you're grand. Whereas yeah. like in my head, I was like, okay, like yeah. if you say so. Joe, you know, I just had no idea what it felt like.
Yeah.
Cause like, I didn't play a lot of sport growing up or anything. So I didn't have that kind of awareness of the mechanics or what was going on. I just knew like, okay, I stand like this and I walk like this or whatever. So then I must like, I'd be a shit patient for a physio then, because it's like, how does that feel? It's like, I don't know. Like, it's like, you know, I don't think I'd be very good at saying like, oh yeah, I can feel that wherever, or oh, when I do this, it feels like this. I think, yeah. So like, I suppose it's like if you go to a dentist, the dentist x-rays your tooth or like pokes at it, it's sore, uses, like you say, their experience and says, okay, that needs a filling, there's a hole there, or oh, there's obviously nerve damage because there's swelling or whatever. Whereas like when it's a physio, like the dentist doesn't say to the patient, how does that, like, you know, like how does that feel? Because like they can see by the fact that they're almost biting their finger off that there's a problem. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so like it's I suppose it's a rare patient physician engagement where you're ultra reliant on that communication, or you're ultra reliant on the patients being able to tell you like, it's sore when I do this, this and this, it's not sore when I do this. And then, you know, there's like, I've been to the physio before where I want to feel better and I want the physio to do a good job. So when they say like, how does that feel? I'm almost fighting the urge to just say, oh yeah, way better. Just cause I don't want to disappoint them. Or like, you know, just cause I don't want it to have not worked.
I say that to patients all the time. I said, okay, start feeling better, worse. Don't be nice to me. Okay. Keep it to me straight. I'm a big boy. I can take it. Cause that's important, right? You get misled. If someone says, oh, it feels much better, right? You say, oh man, I'm so good. Like I just hit the nail on the head and nail. And then the nail on the head. It's called, and you go get led down the wrong path. But you know, the dentist, funny enough, my dad was a dentist, so almost went down that route as well. But you know, I said doctors and therapists, I said it a bit in IT language, as the hardware specialist and as the software specialist. Now, you obviously know a bit about each other's work, but I need to know if that tendon is torn or there might be a potential rib fracture or before I manipulate that and so on. So I obviously, you need to be savvy, you need to be able to read scans and whatnot. But generally, you know, hardware is broken, the bone is broken, you cast it, you operate it, whatever, right? And or something like, all right, I sprained it, it looks like it's okay. And then that becomes more of a software issue. Now, the doctor says, nothing broken, go see the physio, right? And I need to figure it out now. So how do I get this guy better? But like, what is it? Is it like a sprain of the ligament? Is it just a bit of a disjointed ankle? Is it a, you know, God knows what. And so we need to figure out, and that's what I'm passionate about, because that's the thrill of our job, really, is to figure out the puzzle, what's going on. And even better is, I mean, I like the, for us, the best patients are the ones who come in and say, look, every time, I don't know, I do that tennis serve or in my snatch, I get this pinch up here, or I kind of like toes to bar, I feel like I can't reach back. I need to figure out why this is. It can be a multitude of reasons. And when somebody says, comes with a function problem, say, look, every time I do this, this, and this, this, I feel that, but I can do this, I can do that. So again, you piece it together. And this is where you really need to be, is the ingenuity of figuring out what's the problem and also how to address this. And you mentioned that before, there's also, for instance, typical CrossFitter things right here, bicep tendonitis, like here it hurts, we go, ah, it hurts, can't lift my arm. And everybody goes, pokes around here, but that's actually not usually where the problem is. They're almost always reactive and they actually need to go behind here. So always differentiate between source of the pain, as in where the pain originates from, because that tendon is inflamed. But why is the tendon inflamed? Right? Tendon is inflamed because this is too tight, your lats are too tight, shoulder rotates forward, and then if you're in this position, you just can't go overhead, right? And if you keep trying, it just you just close, force close the door, so to speak, so the tenant gets pissed off. And so then there's the third factor, which is how the body responds to it, right? So after a while, I go this way, it hurts. If I go up like this, it doesn't. If I do my toes above like this, it doesn't hurt. And so all of a sudden you got a trap issue, neck. And so we need to address all of that. Or let's say a good therapist addresses all of that. Or that's what at least what we write on our flag. That's what we strive to do. And that hopefully always works. But again, this is coming back to your question. There's an element of, of course it's objective, but it's an opinion, right? Ultimately. Even the patient's explanation is an opinion. But you said before, you said, like, I can't feel fuck all in my glutes. I'm not sure if they're actually firing up or not. I can tell, right? You might not feel it, but I can feel, okay, they're working or not. Or I have a way to say, okay, you might not feel it, but can you see how your leg is, like, chittering when you're trying to control your pelvis? Like, oh, yeah, shit, it's worse on the other side. And then, okay, so that's your glutes not doing the trick. Even though I'm a bit allergic to this phrase, they're not firing. They usually are firing. It's just that they're not, they're not trained that particular functional angle. But so then also on the patient gets a new reference point. Oh, okay, if that gets more controlled, oh, no, hang on, now I feel something. So it's our job as well to somebody who doesn't feel their body 100% to make them feel. It's a big part of the problem, right? Typical thing is low back pain, right? Low back, and we have zero connection to our lower back. We don't know how it looks like. If I ask somebody, so how's your back look like? Is it more arched, round? It's like, oh, Let me have a look. So elbows, hands, knees, we see them all the time. Our lower, you don't never see your back, right? Unless you're a narcissist and look a lot in the double mirrors. But the point is, so how do you, you can only rehab something if you feel it. I would say you can only strengthen a muscle if it fires up. You can't tune an engine if it doesn't start up. And you, how can you learn to control a movement if you don't even know, if you don't feel it? You know what I mean? And so often that's actually what you have to go back to. And sometimes, when I started off in this profession, it's funny, you think, okay, that knee problem, that could be a knee problem, it could be meniscus, it could be ligament, it could be muscle, anything, but it come from the hip, it could be from the foot, it could from the whatever, SI joint, pelvis, and so on. And you think, that's knee, right? Because you're fresh off the press, you look at the knee. But then today, after all these years, like you almost like the thing is like it may be down the line there's some ankle instability thing. And today, often, funny enough, I go straight to that because I know you sort that out and everything else will fall into place quite often. But you need to sell that to your client, right? If you come to me and say my left shoulder hurts, like, yeah, your left toe is stiff. Like, what? So obviously you need to be able to make that connection. It's a joke because it usually doesn't happen. That's happened though. It's rare.
And what's your relationship like? So you mentioned the hardware software thing. Like, what's your relationship like with, say, like surgeons and surgery? Like, obviously, surgery is, I assume, it's something that you want your clients to avoid if and when possible, because it's probably like it's an extreme measure, I suppose. Like, if you can get like fit and healthy without it, you're probably better off, I assume.
Yeah.
Like, provided it's not like adding years to the process, I suppose. But like, are you? Like, is recommending surgery for people, is that something that, like, you're comfortable doing? Or is it something that you're kind of reluctant to do? Or is it something you'd rather avoid if possible? Or, how does it sit with you when you say to someone, if you see a scan and be like, fuck, okay, this, like, they need to go under the knife?
Well, I'm comfortable recommending it when it's indicated, right? And that's the main thing, what is indicated. I mean, there's clear cases, like trauma, really bad fracture that needs to be plated, for instance, the case is clear, right? But they usually don't show up in my doorstep first. But I do actually, I get people fresh off the pitch, you need to check a knee and say, look, I think that ACL is gone, but let's let the inflammation settle down, do an MRI scan, and then we'll discuss what we're going to do, which is, by the way, not necessarily surgery indication by today's standards, but so sometimes it's black and white. But whenever there's a conservative window, let's say, I don't know. I mean, again, you can go at any given time. You and me, I don't know how old you are, Peter, but like, let's say me. Send me at any given time for a scan. You name it, you said, do your left shoulder. Like, let's do my left shoulder. Do an MRI scan. You'll find stuff, right? you'll definitely find stuff because I have, like, I don't know how many years of overhead lifting. I have a physical job. I have been knocked out in handball multiple times. I've wiped out on skis, and so there's 100% stuff going wrong. But my shoulders feel fine. I do. I know if I don't keep myself strong and mobile, I probably will be a different story. But if you look at the scan, and you'll find some little degenerative tears. You'll find some whatever arthritis in your AC joint, or you know. It always sounds, the report always sounds awful. And if you, I always tell patients, I have never seen an MRI report where it says conclusions, pristine condition, you're fine, go home, right? It doesn't happen. There's always, if you don't see anything in a microscopic view, you go close and close. And the radiologist basically is like looking at an artwork and just describes what he sees. And that's again a scan. But as a layman, if you don't understand those terms, that can freak the shit out of you, right? Because you think, I'm really sick. And so it's then my job to put this into context and say, look, let's say with a shoulder AC joint, you know, you've done a lot of overhead lifting. It's normal. We all have that. Don't worry about that. We'll deal with it. The little tears, I did your test. You have good strength in all directions. So you're either compensating really well or your shoulder functions well. So if the shoulder function is good, it's not a threatening condition and we're not missing a really important window of opportunity, we go conservative. But coming back to the doctors, my relationship with orthopedic doctors, I work mostly with orthopedics or rheumatologists, GPs and neurologists and a few others, right? Mostly in the musculoskeletal field. And my relationship, especially in Dubai, is good. It's a very collegial relationship because you, in a way, you depend on each other because if sometimes I don't know, sometimes I think like, oh shit, can I touch this knot? And you know what? I'm more comfortable. I won't charge today. Go and see this guy. He's a good dude. And he will, so and I'll text send him WhatsApp. Say, look, I have this guy. I'm really not sure about that stability there. Can you check it out? Because I need to know, can I treat or shall I rather keep my hands off? And that works pretty well. And so it's a quick system, which is really important that you work together. And therefore, I only work with doctors. You know, you find plenty of guys that, oh, no, it's really bad. You need to do a surgery. And that those people I usually don't work with. My guys, I know, when they say, listen, forget it. This guy needs to go under the knife. I know they need it. And I say, what about this and this? Yes, you're right, but X, Y, and Z. And so that can happen. And then, but, you know, we have all the evidence. You give the client all the thing, and that's, that doesn't happen very often, thank God, though. You know, because again, especially the stuff which is not trauma, hence an accident, is we can always do something. But there's certain things which do, you know, you just say, look, this is either now really threatening, we have to do it, or it's going to bite you in the ass later on. So we may be, you know, but you just give basically if the patient, you give them the whole like decision-making matrix and look, this is the situation, we can do this, but that's the risk, we can do that, and that's the benefit, and that's the risk, and then they ask you, what would you do? And so, you know, I would probably lean towards that, but I'm happy if you say this, I will go this way, then to help you with that. But in general, I'm definitely conservative. I mean, I'm not, I'm more and more leaning not easily towards surgery.
Yeah, because you mentioned there like being pitch side and like waiting for swelling to go down and stuff. Like there must be an element of pressure there where you think, okay, it's probably this. That's not time sensitive. But then like it could be something that is time sensitive. You know, and if you're looking at like a mass of fluid and it's kind of like they can't move their leg anyway. Yeah. So I can't ask, can you bend it this way? Because I can't move it.
Yeah.
And it could be this, which can wait 5 weeks. It could be this, which needs to be done in 3 days. You know, like I have a friend who injured his knee playing football and they thought it was his ACL. So said, yeah, grand, no rush on that. Turned out it was whatever the thing on the front is. I can't remember the name of it.
Patella tendon.
I think so, yeah. And they were like, oh, this probably should have been done like a week ago.
To be fair, I don't need an MRI to see the patella tendon is torn, mate.
Okay, well, you weren't there.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, no, I think like you say, I suppose it's just the experience. Like you build up these, you know, like a list of things you've seen and heard and been, you know, just you build up your toolkit, I suppose, by this is like that time 4 years ago, I better act in this way, I suppose. A lot of your I suppose more well-known clients will be dealt with primarily online. Is that fair?
Yes. Some, yeah.
What are the challenges of that? Because, like, you know, it's you've called yourself a manual therapist a few times,
yeah,
which implies hands-on.
Yeah.
But then if someone's in America or Ireland or Denmark and you're not, it's kind of difficult to be a manual therapist. Like, how, like, do you have to, are you looking at a video saying, like, okay, like, say on Zoom or whatever, saying, like, okay, move around this way, move, how does that feel, that kind of way? Are you purely relying on the storytelling communication side of things, or are you going to them, bringing them to you, whatever, doing a couple of sessions and then saying, okay, now I have a full picture, we don't need to be with each other for 2 or 3 months because here's the rehab you need to do or the prehab you need to do or whatever, and then meet back up later on? Or how does it work?
Well, first of all, I mean, online you can't be a manual therapist, right? You can have the experience of a manual therapist. And that's what I try to teach my clients here in person as well. I said, look, you come to me and you have my hands, and it's obviously good, right? I can release your neck or whatever and give you a boost. But I also tell them, I said, let's say, you have a block drip and I crack that back in place, like, oh, wow, I can rotate, I can breathe, it's great. And that's a bad example, actually. Let's say you have a right neck and basically you work too much at the computer and you can't turn, and I can release this and I turn, like, oh, so much better, thank you very much. And then I tell them, I said, look, but you need to do this self-mobilization for the neck because that's the underlying culprit. You need to do that stretch to maintain it that way. And probably we need to work a bit on your upper back strength to just give you a bit more resilience, hydration, etc., etc., right? And I said, if you don't do these things, there's a good chance you will be back, right? And I was telling them, it's like, I fixed enough. They said, yeah, but you feel better. I said, yes, but I was telling, You don't really need my hands. You need the exercise to stay well, but you can do completely without my hands if you just do what I tell you to. But if I only use my hands, you don't do exercise, you'll be repeat business, right? And so I learned over the years, looping back into the online thing, not just in a second, I learned over the years a bit, like, more and more I mean, in the beginning, you know, you come off manual therapy degree and you feel like you can, you know, manipulate and do the cool shit and everybody, you walk out and you're feeling great and you look like a hero. And yes, these moments are great, but it's not a lasting effect. It's just a boost, right? And then more and more I realized, okay, prescription of exercises, patient education, telling them, okay, this is the problem, these are the exercises, and this is why I need to do them, and that's what's going to be the benefit. And if you don't do that, it's going to, yeah. And I realized more and more with time that sometimes you just, you know, feel like the situation is too acute, and so you give them only exercise before you touch them, and they come back, and they're already better. And then you realize, okay, maybe my hands-on treatment is maybe not the most important thing. In an ideal world, you can combine it. You know, manual therapy has, in some countries, has earned a bit of a bad reputation but I disagree there. I think it's a combination of things. Ultimately, we hold a lot of tools, right? And you can stick a needle in something, you can manipulate something, you can treat a trigger point, use a massage gun, all this shit with, like, what's around. But ultimately, it's just a tool in a toolbox. But what really counts is understanding the dysfunction, what happened here, and how do we change it, right? Last thing. So I mean, I slithered into this a bit like wax, and to be honest, in this online thing, at first I was like, how the fuck shall I do that? I mean, you're over there and I'm here, like, and it's like, come on, give it a go, maybe you can help a bit. And so with my first ever client, it was actually Kyle from Training Think Tank. He sent me one of his clients he's just got me in contact, said, can you help him out? And I said, oh, I don't know, he's in North Carolina and I'm in Dubai, so how do we do this? But let's give it a go. And long story short, it worked beautifully. And I was like, hey, that was actually pretty good. So combined with my experience of realizing the exercise prescription is one of the key things, then I realized, okay, maybe I can do this actually remotely. So I tried with a few more clients and it worked really well. So looping back into your question, it's like, I mean, first of all, it's deciding what problem qualifies for such an approach. And then what I usually do, I send people a questionnaire where they're like in really great detail as possible, tell me, like, you know, what's the problem? Where do you feel it? When do you feel it? What can you do? What can you not do? Is there this and this and this? And then I read through this and look, does this qualify for such an approach? And usually it does. And then we jump on a Zoom call. And a Zoom call is more like, again, digging deeper. What I said before, when all these highways open up in my head, okay, poking a bit deeper and trying to figure out, okay, what's the problem? You have to be much more precise. And I believe if I would have done this 15, 20 years ago, it would have been impossible because I didn't have the experience for it. Because now when I hear something, you can hear like, okay, sounds like this, sounds like this. You're much quicker in your head and you can figure out what the problem is much quicker. And that's the most important thing. But once you figured out what it is, then in a clinic, I would do a test treatment, right? I would do a physical exam. And sometimes online, I need a physical exam. And sometimes I send them a list of self-assessments, self-tests, and have them fill them and send it to me. And I can slow it down, slow motion, and then send back by WhatsApp, or I'd send me more that angle, this angle. And then based on that, I explain them exactly what I think the problem is. And that's one of the most important things. Look, this is like you squat there, you have your left side joint hurts in your back, but actually your right ankle mobility is really poor. And then there you have that stability issue, etc. You can filter this out quite quickly. And again, comes into confirmation bias, what you said before, right? But with these big clients, obviously you're a little bit more under pressure because that better work. Right? You can't just like, oh no, I like hips, so let's treat the hips. So you need to obviously nail it. And then I send them a test protocol and where they like address these things. And I want to know exactly, okay, how does that feel left and right compared? How's the mobility here compared to that? How do you feel the effort is when you have to do that exercise in the right side compared to left? And with this, I'm now it does like funneling out that more and more and more. And with each program, you're getting more precise. But normally I realize with the test program, I nail quite a few things. And then the client says, wow, I didn't realize. I'm like, I can squat 2 to 2.5 times my body weight, but I can't lift my leg sideways, you know, or something small. There's little details. And the devil is always in the detail, honestly. And it's trying to find this. So I haven't really answered your question. Do I meet them? So most of them, actually, I don't. Most of them, I meet them on Zoom, and we don't do Zoom sessions. People always think like we do like a Jane Fonda session with like, oh, do this 15 times. We don't do this. Like we're figuring it out. We're discussing, we explain what we have to do. And then I send them a program with YouTube videos and they follow that. And then the most important thing is feedback, right? I mean, they're my eyes and ears. I can't see them. I don't know what they feel. I don't know what it looks like unless they send me videos and detailed feedback of how they feel. And that's how that works. And yes, I mean, I had a few of them that travel here and they come and stay with me for a week or two. And then it's obviously great then to work like this and meet them finally in person. You can probably then, yeah, filter it down even better. But it actually works. The majority of them I've never met in person or never met for treatment or much later when we sorted it out already. And it works normally pretty well. But the key is I realize people are really, you know, into it and they talk like it's a really interactive thing. Has to be. Because I can't see. I don't stand next to them. So I need to know what they're feeling, what they're doing. And the people who take that serious enough and do this, they have great results.
You mentioned Kyle training. How did that relationship start? Because I assume he didn't just like randomly pluck a physiotherapist to send one of his clients to.
Especially a guy at the time, they never had Instagram. Nobody knew where I was, right? It happened through Andre again. Andre was coached by Kyle at the time. And he had... he had a problem in his body and he was just, he actually just qualified for the regionals at the time in Madrid. So funny enough, I was new to Instagram at the time. Funny story, I told that once before, but I was new to Instagram. I had no idea what I'd do with this. And a friend of mine talked me into it and said, like, you should have Instagram. I was like, why? But this and this, but I don't want to share that stuff. Who wants to hear that? Anyway, long story short, I went on it. I said, all right, mate, I have an Instagram. What do I do now? I said, well, do you follow people? I said, what who do I follow? Like, what do you mean? Anyway, I found Andre. Oh, sorry.
Where do I follow them to?
What do you mean follow? Another stalker. So I found Andre by accident and he had really good content. It sounded like a genuine guy. And he said openly in a post, he said, oh, I'm finally, and you know his story with his brother, right? It's like he's driving force. And he told his story and said, I have this injury and I've seen like 5 therapists and nobody could help me, everybody. And I'm afraid that maybe I have to pull out of regionals. And I just thought to myself, that can't fucking happen. That's not so difficult. So I sent him a message, right, saying, mate, you have this problem. I can help you. Come over. I won't charge
you. It's your left. It's your big toe on your left
foot. Exactly. Exactly. Got it straight away. Anyway, long story short, he I sent him a message. Come in. I'll fix it for you. And he turned me down first because probably thought, like, what an idiot is that? Just like reaching out randomly. And I thought, like, no. again.
Yeah, this guy has no followers and he's only following
exactly.
me. This isn't.
He has three
this
followers.
Weird.
Follows me, and he wants to help me. Must be really good. Anyway, so
yeah.
A few days later, he called me back. He said, "Actually, you know, somebody really messed me around here. So if the offer still stays," and we managed to get him in 2-3 sessions. I straightened him out, so he was good, and he was back training. So from not being able to wash his hair with his arm, he could do ring muscle ups again. So it was a pretty straightforward solution. And anyway, from that, Kyle reached out, was really grateful. He thanked me for it. And a few weeks later, then sent me another one of his clients from the States. And that's the first real remote approach. So that's how this came about. And so actually it's Andre and Kyle that played. I like mentioning this because I'm eternally grateful because they played a pivotal role in this whole thing. That's how this came about. I would have never considered this before, to be honest.
And is that how you got in touch with like Sarah and Sam, and because they were with both training team, although you were with Sarah beforehand, were you?
No, during that was actually through Max. But you know, I mean, it took a turn. I mean, from Kyle's client, then this is the interesting thing, and that's what I love about it. It's like he went then from Dubai to North Carolina, from there the next client in Bangkok, no, Koh Samui it was, and from there it went to Denmark, from there it went to Taiwan, and you know, you name it, literally spinning around the globe. And you talked about time zones before, so world what's it called, the world clock on the iPhone is my best yeah. friend, because otherwise it will fuck up every single call probably. And that's it came about. And then so I had a few good athletes on there, not like super well known, but good athletes. And I was, you know, never really targeted top athletes. I just want to help people. If you have a problem, you want to reach out. If you like somebody can't help me there, then I mean, guys, I didn't design this for high level athlete, but I was lucky enough to definitely have quite a few on my roster right now. And then I think I met Matt.
Is it a bit of a knife edge though? Because like, say you mentioned there that you want like the ideal client for someone like you to have is someone who's all in and someone who's like, tell me what to do and I'll robotically do it. Like I'll religiously make it part of my daily practice. And I'm already hydrating well. I'm already fueling myself well. I'm not eating shit. I'm not like, you know, being lethargic, or I'm not, you know, I'm not like taking any shortcuts. Like, so that you know they're going to do what you tell them to do and you know that they'll do it to the best of their ability. And that it'll be a daily process, like versus say someone who's like, oh, how can I fix this? And be like, ah, fuck it. That seems like a bit of effort. Like I'll just shrug instead and like hold myself differently or whatever. But then the flip side of that is it's obviously high pressure then, because if this is their livelihood or if they're hoping it's going to become their livelihood and the problem doesn't get fixed or another problem arises, you know, like it's, say someone like Sarah, it's kind of like, you know, she's going to do everything that you tell her to do because that's her personality. That's her, like, she's just really driven. But then the flip side of that is it's so high pressure because she's such a well-known person in the sport and she wants to do really well in the sport and should do really well in the sport. Yeah. So then you're obviously going to shoulder, or like, you know, logically or illogically, you're going to shoulder some of the blame if that doesn't happen, because you know it's hard not to take that personally, I suppose. Like it's hard not to bring that on yourself, I suppose. Like when it's just like, I just, it's really knife edgy where it's like they're going to do exactly what I tell them, but if it doesn't work, I'm fucked.
Yes, you are. But it's, I don't know. I mean, I try to treat, you know, for me, if you come on as a client, you have that utmost respect and I give you what I got. I give you my best job. And I think that's important. I mean, I worked with 2009 and 2010, I worked for a while with Federer, and that was a situation very early where I thought as well, like, oh my God, you know, if I fuck this up, I'm all over the newspapers, right? But then you think from, well, no, you can't think like this because you can't do your job. And the same with like somebody like Sarah or some others. It's like, yes, but ultimately, you know, these are driven people, want to do a job really well. And I'm reasonably good at what I do. I believe I'm decent at what I do. And I know what my skills are. And I think the key thing is to be very honest about what you can do, what you cannot do, right? I know what I can deliver. And I know it can make happen. What I can promise you is that you get my absolute best shot every single time. And if I don't know something, I'll tell you, or and then but I'll try to find out. And if I can't find out, I find somebody who can, right? And so this is where network comes into the game. I mean, in a case like this, you pull in, again, comes about network, you pull in other people, you ask, for instance, like, I mean, I had sometimes a call with a surgeon from we had a little scare at one point during the rehab process. And then I had, you know, the first thing I did is like, I got something, a message from the States and this, so I got on a call at 5 o'clock in the morning with a mate here who was happily already, he's an orthopedic, he hooked me up with a guy in Paris, one of his friends, and then, you know, all of a sudden, you're connecting everywhere. So it's, but ultimately, it's like you can, I think it's about honesty, honestly, what you can achieve, what can you deliver and what not. I mean, in Sarah's case, I mean, I started, it's Max who got me on board, and actually, it's not funny, but it's like today is the anniversary of her ACL tear, right? Today, a year ago, exactly, it happened. And we started actually working a few weeks before that and successfully sorted out the problem which she had for a very, very long time. And then this happened, you know, this is like, this is just, that was just really bad luck. That was a freak accident. It just happened. And then we had to deal with it, right? You just, at first you think, oh, fuck. And then, when you have clarity, you make a plan, you regroup, and off you go. And it was a time as well when, I mean, I haven't, for instance, I've done one, you know, doing online rehab, as in rehabilitation after a surgery, is a really tricky stuff. So far, it's more like people have pains, they hurt themselves, they have pain somewhere. That's, for me, I find relatively easy. If it's non-structural, that's an easy job usually. But when it comes to a full rehab, that's different. And there's actually me then also who said, look, she wanted me to do her rehab because we have built up some trust in that short period we worked together, and I've proven her that I can deliver. But I said, look, I want to do this and I really want to be on this team, but I need somebody on the ground. You know, she decided after surgery in Iceland, I said, I need somebody on the ground. I need eyes and ears there. I'm more comfortable with this. And so we found ourselves in the shape of Runnar in Iceland, a good physio who did the groundwork, and we consulted together. And then as soon as he was ready to kind of get into the training programs, I started to take over, and we started to do this together with Max. And it's been a real team effort. And then more and more, you know, the physio there had to do a little bit less, and we did more programs. So it's important that he say what he can do, what he cannot do, what he's comfortable with, and what he's not comfortable with. And I think this, I do this in front of everyone. You know, if I feel like I can't do this, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
When did you work with, no, it does, yeah. When did you work with Federer?
That was in 2009 and 10. So he has his home base here. I mean, it's not something I advertise greatly, but this is one of those high pressure moments. But he has his second home base here, right? So he trains here a lot because usually when the weather is bad in Europe, the weather is great here. And so they go through on the way to the Australian Open and then on the other way to the US Open. And they train often here. And so he spent, you know, 3-4 weeks here at the time. And then he used to take care of him in this period and few tournaments.
And was that a Swiss connection? Like, was that did you know each other, or did someone in his team know you beforehand?
No, actually not. I mean, I don't know. The Swissness maybe helped. I'm not sure, possibly, but it was through a client who was actually the guy who handled some of his business, like property and whatnot, and all the like the local business here. And he gave me a call and said, "You wanna work with him?" I said, "Not sure." Okay. No, so that was this.
I heard an insane stat about him. I heard it like last year. They were going through all the top, you know, the Forbes list of like sports earnings or whatever. And it was like they had them broken down, and it was like, say, Ronaldo, like Messi, I can't remember anyone else on the list really, but like they were going through all the different sports, and it was like soccer players, golfers, tennis players, whatever. But it was to do with like direct earnings from the sport versus earnings outside the sport. Yeah. And it was, you know, as in like what did their name get them versus what did their ability get them, we'll say, or their performances. And like, oh, fuck, I'm not going to remember any of the numbers, but I'll just make up some numbers just for the purposes of making my point. But we'll say like Ronaldo earned like, you know, 60 million. And like 45 million of that was through like playing, and then like direct sponsorships from playing. So like, you know, whoever Man United sponsors are, like paid him to do stuff or whatever. And then it was similar with Messi and all those. And then where the gap started to appear was like sports that hadn't been happening. So like football was happening, but it was happening behind closed doors. But like tennis wasn't happening. But it was something like, oh, it was like Federer's was like, he earned nothing from playing the sport, like in that period of time. He didn't earn any money at all from playing the sport, but he earned like a crazy amount of money from like all outside sponsorship deals and like property and stuff. But like it was remarkable how much money he earned lifting a tennis racket. Yeah. For like, not, he just didn't do his sport for 2 years and he earned like more than, he was like number 20 on the list or something. But yeah, that it was just crazy. What's the most common sport that you deal with now? Is CrossFit up there, or are there other sports that are up there?
I would say at the moment it's CrossFit, yes, for sure. Because A, it's a really big scene here in Dubai. B, I think also a bit through my probably online presence and so on. It's, I mean, already before I had the high level athletes on my roster.
It's obviously going to blow up massive after this. Like this episode, when this episode comes out, he'll be.
Yeah, spread the word, mate. Do it. I'll rely on you.
You'll have an extra one person in touch.
I need backup then, yeah. Man. It's like the, it's CrossFit. It's definitely, I mean, I see footballers, I see ultra runners quite a bit as well. And to be honest, I see anybody who wants to see me. In terms of sports, I mean, I used to, when I came to Dubai, rugby is really big. You know, rugby people go and see rugby people. I treat them, and I see triathletes and all this, but I treat anything musculoskeletal, but definitely have a lot of athletes, but they also have to, you know, you have back and neck pain and so on. It's really bread and butter. But CrossFit is pretty, I mean, let's say generally strength, conditioning, fitness plus CrossFit it's a young town here, you know, and like you have a population where fitness and health is really important. And it's a bit like LA, you know, there's the body cult on the beach is big. And so people really spend a lot of money and effort on it. And so therefore there's injury. So that's probably what I see the most, I would say. Yeah.
What's the most common injury you see in CrossFitters? Is it that bicep tendon?
I think shoulders are very common. Shoulders and backs, definitely lower backs and shoulders. Elbow tendonitis or tendinopathies are quite common. It's quite a multitude of things, really. And but I think I would say shoulder is probably the winner, I'd say, at the moment at least. It's a bit seasonal. And you know, there's a CrossFit, little niggles, they're not even mentioned. It's like me, I casually just brushed across, like, yeah, I have a few muscle tears, but who cares? I mean, you know, CrossFitters love to talk
it's
about
it. It's like, oh yeah, I haven't been able to scratch my head in 6 months, exactly. But other than that, I'm
exactly.
Fine.
I wash my hair like that. But it's all right. I can still snap. Yeah.
No, it's interesting. Like, because I suppose, like, because it's such a, like, it's a high impact, like, high speed, like, multimodal sport. So, like, it's going to, you know, like in football, you think, like, say, GAA here, it's like hamstrings. Yeah. Like, that's the most common thing to go is hamstrings. Whereas, like, with CrossFit, it's like, well, I mean, if someone's doing, like, an excessive amount of box jumps, or if someone's doing, like, an excessive, you know, like, there's so many different things in use all the time that, like, yeah, it must be hard to nail down one thing.
Yeah, you have the same challenges like coaches as well, right? You prepare for the unexpected, right? You expect the unexpected. Mm. And so whether you prepare somebody for one push-up or for, I don't know, five times, whatever, 12 handstand push-ups, etc., or like the combination, right? Then you go from like 30 barbell cycling, 30 power snatches into straight into this. It's a different demand on the body than just doing, you know, heavy deadlifts or heavy squats, or, you know, or just doing like a one rep max snatch. It's different things. So the coaches, for them, is a challenge to prepare, but also for us in a way, for the patients.
You mentioned that Instagram and that you join Instagram and stuff. Is like, do you get frustrated by Instagram? Like, say, there's a lot of coaches, there's a lot of physios, there's a lot of like movement experts, some experts and some self-proclaimed experts, I suppose. And there's a lot of accounts that go through, you know, like, oh, if this is happening to you, you should do this. And if that's happening to you, you should do this, you know, like for movement and stuff. Like, Does it annoy you? Like, are you ever in danger of becoming a bit of a keyboard warrior and like being, you know, like commenting on posts being like, shut the fuck up, you shouldn't be telling people to do that? Or like, are you just comfortable and confident that people who, you know, seek you out will get the help that they need? Whereas, you know, like, people are always going to talk shit, basically.
I mean, I have a bit of a, I don't know, it's a bit of a split relationship with this Instagram thing. First, I'm not, like, I don't love it. For me, I need it for my job, and I try to be as genuine as I can. You know, what I don't like is, for me, I don't follow a lot of people, because there's simply something which annoys me, or somebody's condescending, or like, you know, it's like a bit of a smart ass, and it goes on. I don't like it, because for me, you know, I'm sure everybody sees that. You go on certain pages and you walk away feeling minor, or you feel like, in the beginning when I went to Instagram, I thought like, everybody's great and I'm total shit, right? Because it's like everybody showed off what they can and not. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be that. You know, I want to be me. I want to be as genuine as I can be, ideally. And yes, things are not as polished as I can be. That's mostly to do with my dad edits, but I'm getting better at it. I'd like to outsource that, ideally. But the problem is content, the quality of the content is still important, and some editing skills are not great. But then again, you know, this is me, right? This is who I am. And I try, and please, anybody who has an opinion that I'm doing this, then please DM me straight away, because I don't want to tell people, oh, everybody doing this and that's totally wrong, or you shouldn't be doing this, so everybody does this, but you actually should be doing this. I don't want to be condescending. I don't want people to feel bad when they look at my content. I want people to learn something. And I want to just, something crosses my mind, I think, oh, that would be a good post. And I sometimes think, nah, nobody cares, right? But, and then I just put it out there. And I feel like something which could be useful. And it's not only for the sport, the space of CrossFit, but so that my relations, I always think, like, you know, whoever likes that style will follow me, and whoever doesn't, you know, so be it. But I am me, and I don't want to be somebody or pretend to be somebody I'm not. And so the followers I get, I don't focus on that much. Of course, it's important that you have followers, right? I mean, everybody wants to grow their following. But at the moment, I'm quite comfortable where I am as well, because you said before, my shit is going to blow up after this podcast, right? The thing is, at the moment, I'm doing everything one-on-one. And some of the success, if you want to call this, has come a bit early. And because what I want to do, one-on-one is time-consuming, and therefore it's also a bit costly, right? And what I want to make it more accessible for everyone. So I'm working on like more like different types of programs which are much more affordable. And but before I put this out there, I want to make sure they're solid, you know, that people really actually get better with them, not just kind of take people's money and then, oh God, didn't get better, whatever. How can I catch them, right? And that's at the moment something I'm working on. And so in a way, I watched a podcast a while ago. I think it was Kevin Hart with Joe Rogan. And Joe Rogan asked Kevin Hart, he said, I remember that scene because I laughed my face off. He said, when do you notice when you like made it and when your career really took off? And he mentioned some kind of a moment. And he said, you know, it's like you never know what your rocket fuel is. You never know what the fuel in the rocket is. But when that rocket takes off, you better be ready, because otherwise it's a fucked up rocket ride, right? And that quote stuck with me. It was so funny. And I thought to myself, it's the same thing, right? You have, yeah, good athletes, but you also, when you actually, people come to you, don't want to come and say, oh, I don't have time, and actually, yeah, my roster is full. So I want to make sure that this is, and so to be a bit under the radar at the moment is not a bad thing as such. And when I'm ready with this, then, I mean, I'm treating right now, obviously. I have clients, but I'm limiting a little bit how many I take, because I want to uphold the quality. But so there's definitely something that in the making, and this is when the whole, obviously, you know, exposure becomes more early. And at the moment, I'm not too freaked. If it's now, I don't even know how many followers I have right now. It's not the most relevant thing, because ultimately people who need to find you will find you, and people who don't like you, they unfollow you. And that's the way life goes. And I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah. Do you make a conscious effort to have it? Because we actually spoke about this when we got in touch first. You messaged me asking,
who are you?
What my name was. You were like, there's not much to go off. And I said, well, similar to you, where, you know, it's kind of a faceless. I think, like, a lot of the time I try to step back a little bit, because I don't want to be I don't want to be at the forefront of it, kind of. Like, obviously, I'm sitting here with a fucking microphone, but, like, I don't want... I'd rather if people clicked onto the page that they saw the athletes or the guests or coaches or whatever that I'm trying to show. I'd rather they saw those people and, like, not me. So I suppose I kind of made a conscious effort to keep myself to the stories section and not be in the post section, I suppose. I think it was kind of a subconscious thing. It just kind of happened. And then I was like, oh, that actually kind of works well where I'm not clogging up the feed with shit about myself, but I can put it in the stories or whatever because it doesn't last forever. Is that a conscious thing that you've done where you're like, okay, this is momentum and this is what we are about and this is what we do? And when in, you know, like easily you could say, well, I am Nick and I own momentum and this is what I do and this is, you know what I mean?
Yes, I mean I know exactly what you mean. I say semi-conscious probably. I mean first of all, I always think like, well, people don't really care what you, if you're just having a coffee or a barbecue, right? It's like they don't really, like, people come there because they're interested in what I do. I think at least that's my perception. And this same friend who got me on Instagram, he's actually in marketing and whatnot, he said, like, you know, you need to share a bit who you are. They don't want to know who they're interacting with. And it's like, oh, cares, right? I mean, who wants to know what I'm doing, etc.? But of course it's important, as your identity and what we're doing right now should help that people really, you know, get a bit of a better insight in the person I am. And I believe people who have me as their rehab coach or physio, they would say, yeah, that's the same guy I know in person. But you need to show people a little bit. But sometimes, you know, I feel like I share something like, oh, is that really necessary? And I delete it again, right? Like, do they really need to see, like, they're sitting with my dog on the steps, you know? But then again, you know, just people have dogs. Oh, you have a dog as well. The interaction is actually pretty amazing from that. And so I don't keep myself. I mean, I'm not somebody who likes to be in the spotlight terribly much. I mean, I don't mind it if it's in a good way, you know, I'll be honest. But but it's not something like, oh, look at me. At least I try. That's what I try to avoid. And if anybody would disagree with that, then please reach out and tell me off. I'm a bit like you. I try to put on my feed, I keep the things which is relevant. So which is either relevant for people to see who I work with or a client's amazing achievement. Obviously, we have some big clients. It's nice if that shows up there sometimes as well. That's definitely good for the marketing. But I try to keep it informative. I try to bring across a bit, you know, sometimes quotes which I really like and I feel like they match with momentum. I try to mix it up. What I make a conscious effort is I don't want to be another page where you see, like, my 256th version of a hip flexor stretch. You know what I mean? It's like, how many of those does one need? You know, you need 2-3 good ones and then you're good. So I don't try to be constantly invent myself, because sometimes that annoys me actually sometimes. But if, like, they constantly have to come up with new exercise and you don't need that many, you know what I mean? It's like, and so I try not to be another exercise library. When I feel like, oh, this is a really cool technique, I think you should know that and it helps you, then I put it out there. But if I also feel like, you know, people struggle, I keep finding, I had the other day, they post about a knee pain and people always come in and say, I have a meniscus tear, but they actually don't. Then I post about this and say, look, this actually, it might hurt in the same place, but it could also be this, and you solve it very easily. So I keep this on my feed and the private stuff more on my stories, and I try to keep this with him as well. But people want to know that, yes, he trains as well, and yes, he lifts as well, and he also sucks sometimes at his pull-ups. I don't know, he does recreation. Yes, I have put a few times sauna on there because I believe in it as a recovery tool, but a bit practice what you preach. And sometimes, yes, something private. And I think it's, you know, I want to say happy anniversary to my wife. I put it out there because that's my channel. I don't have a private Instagram account, but also don't try to overshare. And another thing is, for instance, you know, sometimes something bothers you. It's less COVID or if it's the Ukraine crisis, whatnot. And I try not to be political on there either, even though I really have to bite my tongue sometimes. That's another one. I'm sure you have the same at times.
Yeah, no, I think, I think a lot of, I suppose it'd be more of an issue if the page was bigger, I suppose, but I think a lot of people think that, you know, that by not saying something, you're saying something, and it's like, I'm saying I don't really think this is the correct forum for me to be sharing. Yeah. Like, I don't think a 15 second video is going to give a full breakdown of what I think is happening and why I think it's happening or what could be done. Yeah. Like, you know, and also I think there's a couple of million people that are better placed to explain what's happening and why it's happening than me, like, you know. But yeah, no, I think there is a certain pressure with it. So yeah, I try and keep my stories kind of light in general. And then the posts are all just focused on, so like you'll have posts now when this comes out, but like I won't be like in the background waving.
Why not? Why not, mate? I actually like you. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Sorry, go on.
You just had the today, you have a little bit more time on your hands, right? You had this, like, you know, ask me a question or what do you think is 22.3. This stuff, actually, I have to say, I mean, this is your private now. You really, you know, and in with the, you know, with a COVID head and everything, you just yourself out there still, and that's actually pretty cool, because I realized, oh, that's Peter, right? Because we haven't met before.
Yeah, I think it's actually funny. So I do one of those every week. I do like a question box every week, just to keep my finger on the pulse a bit, I suppose. And I think every time I put it up, I'm waiting for a message to come on, or a question to come in, being like, that episode was shit. Yeah. You know, like I'm just waiting for something like that to happen, or like for a criticism to come in so that I can react, you know, like change something or see like a bit of introspection or whatever. But yeah, in general, I do it like every Monday, just so that it's routine for me. And in general, like grand, whatever. And then yesterday, because I like usually I just do like text responses. So like I'll take a picture of like my leg really close up, so it's like a black screen, and I'll just type a response. And then yesterday I was like, oh, fuck it, I have time. I'll just like record answers to it. I got like four times as many questions as I usually get. And it's like you said, where I think people kind of engage a bit more because they're like, oh, it's a person. Like it's not just a brand or it's not just like a company or a whatever, like a faceless thing. So yeah, I think like, but then I suppose the flip side of that is you can get kind of sucked into it then as well, where like you're missing something that's happening because you're like, you know, recording yourself answering a question about thrusters or whatever. Yeah, I think because we're all at home and we're all stuck at home for the next like 5 or 6 days, I think that was there wasn't a danger of me missing anything of import yesterday when I was in the kitchen recording my replies to those. I think everybody just needed a break from each other every so often for a little while yesterday. But yeah, no, I think I definitely agree with what you say, where it is easy to slip into the thing of like, oh, who gives a fuck? Like, nobody gives a shit that I'm like making a cup of coffee or whatever. But like, I think it does give people a bit of an insight into who it is and what they're about and what they like or dislike, or and it's the whole purpose of this. Like if people didn't give a shit, there'd be no place for you to come and tell, like nobody would listen when you come and tell me about how you got into what you do, or you know why you work with certain people or how you work with certain people. Like there'd be no audience for it, so people obviously care. Do you know, like people obviously are interested, or else we'd be just both be speaking into a vacuum, which I hope isn't what's happening.
And ultimately that's what you do, right? I mean, you did yesterday said I'm gonna do this and had a lot more interactions. That means people are interested in that. That doesn't mean that you have to do that, oh they like it, or do this. You just being you, right? You felt like doing it, do it. That's what I try, not like, oh my god, I got like five times many likes, let me do more of that. I mean, there's an element of this. You wanna cater into what people, why people come to you, right? But at the same time, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to prostitute yourself to like what people want. It's basically you have a message you want to tell. That's what I try to do. That's what I want to tell. And sometimes I have to remind myself, what's the whole purpose of my Instagram feed? Apart from being a window looking people, client, potential clients, seeing what I do and what I'm about, but also like what do I want to deliver this? And not just like, oh, people want to see more of that. But yeah, but I don't want it. Do that, you know what I mean? People want to see exercise, but there's lots of them out there, you know. The Instagram doesn't need another exercise account, I find, somehow. Maybe it does.
Like it might change for me now because I actually have some time on my hands now, or like because I'm stuck at home. But like I remember before, I made a couple of videos, like just stupid like joke videos, and they did really well. But like it's so much fucking effort that I was just like, fuck that. Like I'm not, it's actually not worth it. Like making like five people laugh is like, it's just not worth the amount of time and effort that went into it. Like I had my wife throw a can of like rain energy drink at me for a video, and like it fucking hurt. And it's kind of like, is this yeah, it's like, is this funny enough for me to do something like this again? So yeah, although cabin fever might kick in now the next couple of days, we might do something.
I'm curious. I'm gonna watch this space a bit more closely probably. But you know, I had the other day, I did the first, I don't know if you'd noticed, maybe did, I did the first time I talked into the camera. And in the first, I looked and watched it like, God's sake, you know. You always hate you hate your voice, you hate your looks, because, but nobody looks at you like this. It's like a bad hair day. Nobody cares, right? They only see you see that.
Yeah, yeah.
And ultimately, it's just who's you. But then I looked at it and sent it to my wife and said, I look really serious. You know, maybe that's what she says. You know, it's grand. But you just, because you're not used to it. But I want to do more of that, right? Tell people something and they see who I am, but still delivering the message on delivering, says, "Look how good I am." You know, that's not the intention.
Mm. Yeah. No, I think, like, someone asked me yesterday, do you listen back to, do you ever listen back to an episode in its entirety? And like, do you ever end up regretting, not pursuing a certain line of questioning or whatever? I have never listened back to, never. I load up the, you know, the audio tracks, and I'll check that they're both working, and I'll check that the levels are okay on both of them. I'll check that there is no doubling up or echoing or anything, by looking at it, not by listening to it, by looking at the sound wave. And then I'll make sure it's lined up. I'll make sure there's no gaps. And then I'll click, say, 5 random segments, and I'll play it, usually the other person's side, and I'll just make sure that my voice is also coming in at the end, and then I'll click a different section, and then that's it. And I trust that the conversation is how I remember it being.
Yeah.
And like, if something happens where someone's like, oh fuck, I shouldn't have said that, I'll write down in my notes, take out 10 minutes, 20 or whatever, so that I'll go back and find that exact moment and not have to listen to be like, where was... Now, the only time it bites me in the arse is when I'm doing little highlight clips, where I'm like, oh God, I'm going to have to listen to myself ask them a fucking question. So I'm the same. I hate looking at myself, listening to myself, just hate it. So I think everyone goes through that. Well, look, we'll finish with a quick fire. I threw in some random ones because I wasn't really sure.
What. That was good. You might have to cut that part. Wait, 1:30:06, Peter.
That's 1:30.
1:30, exactly. So 1:30, 15 seconds. Yeah. You might have to cut that. Let's see in a minute.
Yeah. Row or ski?
Rower.
Dumbbell or barbell?
Dumbbell.
Stretch or foam roll?
Stretch.
These are the random ones now.
What's the random ones?
Worst injury you've come across?
Myself or with clients?
Both? Client.
Whew. There was a few. I had recently one where a lady did a push-up and somebody flipped a 220-pound tire on her foot and pretty much scrambled the whole leg.
Oh, so she was on her toes.
Yeah. She's doing much better, though. Fuck. We get her back, but that was rough. That was rough. I had a few others, but yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know why I expected a less grotesque answer to that question.
I have another. That's on me for asking it. The funniest one I've ever heard. No, the answer is good. It's good. There's two. All right. If you have another minute, don't cut that.
Yeah.
One was it was back in Switzerland. Somebody had a whiplash and asked what happened, and said the springbok jumped in my neck. And I just
hear myself.
Yeah, springbok. You know the ones with the horns, the mountain goats.
Yeah,
jumped in my neck, and the best thing I could come up is I hate when that happens. I hear myself say that. That was a really stupid thing. And then shortly after that, somebody who got rolled over by a rock, by a boulder, wasn't super seriously hurt, but I just couldn't help myself think of Indiana Jones. You know that?
Yeah, that's immediately what popped into my head when you said it.
Right? I started laughing. I'm really sorry. I don't mean to laugh. I was very young then, very inexperienced. He said, "You think of Indiana Jones, don't you?" Fuck yes, I do. I'm sorry. Good. Sorry, deviated.
It's like, did he manage to grab his hat in time?
Exactly.
Where am I? Static or dynamic stretch?
Static.
It
depends. It depends. You hate that answer. But it depends.
Burpees or thrusters?
Trust us.
Biggest success so far for Momentum?
For Momentum. I think we're in the middle of it. I would say Sarah's recovery is one. I would say it's definitely a success, and not just to say her, but I think the collaboration with Max, Kyle, the guys from Think Tank, and some others. I would say generally the biggest success is how I'm managing to link up with multiple training platforms across different continents, and I would probably put it at that. At that.
Yeah, well, you're better at world clock than I am. I'll say that much.
You don't know that. I just won that one with you.
Well, listen, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's been great chatting to you and getting to know you a bit. And yeah, I think you're a remarkable guy. I don't think I've ever had anyone on here who have been like, well, that's a boring journey they've had to get to where they've gotten. But yeah, it's
mine's
incredible.
The first? No, don't tell me.
No, it's incredible what you've done, and I suppose the risks that you've taken, like to back yourself and try new things and try different things and different approaches and stuff. And you obviously care about your athletes, which is, I suppose, always a recipe for success. But thank you. It's been great getting to know you, and best of luck with all of your future endeavors for Momentum and personally as well.
Thank you very much, Peter. Thanks for having me on. It was fun, and it's great to get to know you.